Yes. I knew there was one more point I wanted to make, and that is that the other thing that I applaud in the tiered approach and the way we're moving is that when the 09 waiver came out, I felt like it was additional duplicative regulation, and there was no acknowledgement of what NTMPs are contributing. And I feel like this the tiered waiver and the new approach actually creates it does not create new regulations for people that are doing a good job. But what it does is it gives water quality staff and probably an awareness as well to CAL FIRE to go after those instances where people are not doing a good job. And I think that in the long run, that will actually contribute more significantly to water quality, because I think that people like me are already doing a good job, and putting more regulations on me isn't really going to change. But if you really incentivize, or if people know that they're not up to snuff, they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and that water quality will be out and inspecting, I think that there will be a lot more voluntary assurance that's doing. And I'm not saying that's happening in very many instances, but I think we all know that there's always a bad apple, and I think it's time to go after the bad apples. And then the last point I made was I didn't realize that staff was going to suggest to extend the deadline, but I think it's an excellent idea. I think we're so close to having a waiver that we can all support and be happy with. I think it's been a lot of hard work. It's also been compromise on all sides. It's also been a real educational process. And so I think extending it and making sure that it's something that we're all happy with, because there's still details to be worked out, and I'm sure that there'll still be some disagreements on those details. And so to have time to really hash it out and work it out, I think, is important. And so I thank you all for your time today.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions of me?
Comments or questions?
Okay, thank you.
Very good.
Can I make one comment?
Yes, sir.
Which is, Lisa was referring, one of her comments was referring to some summary statements that were included in a draft report that is draft. It's a report on our monitoring results. Frankly, I haven't even looked at it. And so Jim had provided as a courtesy copy to Lisa to take a look at it. So I'm not disqualifying any of your comment. Yeah, so I'm not, your comments are totally fine. But I'm just acknowledging this is not a document that's out for formal review.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
It's draft.
Okay. Craig Blanco's next.
True. Good point.
Thank you for that clarification, by the way. Appreciate it.
Ladies and gentlemen of the board and staff, my name is Craig Blanco. I'm a consulting forester from Fort Bragg. For over 30 years, I've worked exclusively with non-industrial family forest and family ranches. I may not have written the most NTMPs in the state, but I'm sure I've written a lot of the earliest ones. Most of the 20 or so ones that I've written predate 1995, 96. So I've certainly dealt with this updating issue. I had some other things to say, but I'm going to do away with them because I just feel the need to clarify some of the stuff that was going on here a little bit earlier. I realize there's still a little confusion over this whole issue. This issue of updating to the current standards is something that is built into this process. Every time we submit a notice of timber operations, there's a questionnaire that you have to ask or answer, and the question is, has any change occurred on the NTMP, or are there any new listed species found on your NTMP? And in the case when the coho was listed as endangered here a few years ago, you always have to answer yes. And basically what that means is you have to amend your NTMP to update it to address the new status of the listed species. Samantha asked, the forest practice rules that are in effect when your NTMP is approved stay with the plan. But when you have endangered species listed, then you have to update it. And the endangered species rules goes beyond the forest practice rule. If tomorrow they make robins a listed species and they promulgate new rules, we need to comply with those rules. So what does this mean? You know, let's face it, water quality's two main issues in the waiver was canopy and shade, that issue, and sediment. And the forest practice rules in the upgrading to take care of the COHO considerations have changed radically over the years in those two elements. And so the question was, when the COHO was listed, I had the option to either A, update my plans to the new anadromous salmonid rules, or have a consultation with Fish and Game. And I can quote Mr. Bill Snyder back here, and I think it's okay, Bill. He told me, Craig, probably the least painful way would be to simply update to the new rules. And that's basically what I had to do. So even though my 1992 plan still has the original forest practice rule with it, I've had to adopt it to meet the changing elements of the COHO. So that's you need to understand that. That's really, really important. Even though the spacing for water bars has not changed in 20 years, it's still the same. If you look at the slide that CDF put up here, we've had to make these other changes. If I can say to Mr. Corbett, you were concerned about the basin plans. If you look in the forest practice rule, somewhere under, I believe, Section 916, it very specifically says that all timber activities shall comply with the TMDL of the basin plan. It's written right there. If you want to talk about verification and liability, which was the topic here recently, every time we sign an NTO, a notice of timber operations, the forester has to verify right there that he's on the hook for ensuring that those operations comply with best management practices and with the forest practice rules. So if you want us to sign something for a basin plan, that's fine. We're doing it anyway. And so it's just a redundant kind of thing. Those were some of the things I wanted to clarify. I think that's very important. And if you have questions, I think either myself or some of the other folks here can answer. But we need to understand that right off the bat. Let me continue. You know, I want to echo Lisa and give credit to Matt and Jim Burke and the staff here for being open to this whole process. I want to thank you for educating yourselves, because when I spoke before this board a year ago, no one knew anything about the NTO, the NTMP, or the forest practice rules. And I have to give staff a lot of credit. They've come a long way in educating themselves about something that they weren't totally familiar with. And I want to thank the board for giving that time out for them to actually look at gathering data to verify their position, which I thought previously had been unjustified. The field evaluation, you gave them time out to do a field evaluation. The results of the field evaluation, I'm not going to get into all the nuances of it, but I want to say this. When you read through that again, have in the back of your head the element of significance. Are these problems putting a teaspoon of dirt into the creek, or are they putting 10 truckloads of dirt into the creek? This is, I think, where some of the difference between CDF and water quality comes. What is significant? What is going to cause deleterious effects to the aquatic environment? You need to consider that when you read those results. I don't necessarily disagree with the concept that ECPs can improve water quality. What I disagree with is the fact that I don't think that report justified the conclusion. So that being said, I want to say this, that I think Jim's done a good job in coming to a compromise here. So I really want to say that I'm willing to compromise. You know, we put a lot of time into this. We're all tired of it. We need to move on. We need to kind of get it together here. And the tiered A and tiered B and everything that he talked about, I think, has a lot of merit. I think we can continue to work on that. And I think it has to be worked on in good faith and in open environment. Going forward here, I think the most beneficial things about this is, number one, is that we're talking with water quality. And number two, water quality and CDF are talking to each other. Because there's been this turf war going on here for years between these agencies. And sometimes it's related to individual personalities. And we've been in the middle of it. And we're the ones who've gotten hammered by this whole turf battle. And so hopefully that will improve and that will change in the future. And finally, I want to say my last concluding comment is this. After we submit an NTMP and we have to go on a field evaluation with all the different agencies, it's called the pre-harvest inspection. When we're done, I gather everybody around the hood of the pickup. And I ask all the agency people, okay, folks, let's put our cards on the table right now. Is there something you saw out here that you haven't talked about? Is there something going on out here that I'm going to hear about a month from now that you're going to blindside me with at the 11th hour? I don't want that from water quality in this process. They've been dealing in good faith so far. I've been really pleased with it. They've been acting with a lot of integrity, and I think as we go forward in these discussions, and it's going to be a compromise, it's going to be a give and take, I hope that both of us can continue to operate in that same good faith environment. And I think we'll end up with a waiver that we can all live with. Thank you.
Any comments or questions? Mr. Corbett.
First of all, thank you for your testimony. That was really good. I'm very well aware the Forest Practice Act is referenced into the basin plan. The thrust of my question was, if we change the basin plan, is that automatically changed? And I think I got an answer to that.
Thank you, Craig. Peter Bradford.
Good afternoon. My name is Peter Bradford. I have an NTMP in Mendocino County, 1997, and I'm also a member of the Southern Focus Group and one of the petitioners that, you know, got involved at the very beginning of this whole process. And I really don't have a lot to say after you had Lisa up here and then you had my forester up here as well, and both of them are so eloquent, I don't know what to say after it. But I do want to say a couple of things, and that is that, number one, when this process started out, it was like a gun was pointed at me as a landowner. You know, just another big pile of regulations that you have to comply with or else. And I have to hand it to staff, Matt and Jim Burke. They've done a tremendous job of bringing not only staff members and landowners and foresters and CAL FIRE together to talk this thing out and work on it. It's been the best process that I, as a landowner, have seen from any agency in the state, you know, when it comes to regulation. I applaud you, the board members, for allowing this to happen. I also applaud the time that you've given staff to work on this. I think it's vitally important that, you know, when you're, at least from a person who has to pay taxes on property and try to make a living on it, I think it's vitally important that agencies allow the time to properly support and build, if there a regulation has to exist, build a regulation so that it will not force somebody out of business and be reasonable and allow the landowner to comply. And I think you've done that in this waiver. I have a lot of hope for it. I like the Tier A, Tier B. I think there's, it's a good process, and I think this is something that you should hopefully build into future regulations that come out of your board. I like the collaborative process, and I especially like, as Craig mentioned, the fact that you're working well with CAL FIRE and starting that process and getting on the same dialogue. I do have one last thing I'd like to add, and that is that I heard early in the meeting during the public comment an idea of having an RPF as a staff member. I thoroughly agree with that. I think it would be a good thing to do. Thanks again.
Peter, thank you. Any comments or questions for Peter? Thank you, Peter. Jason Paburko, followed by Matt Green.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the board. My name is Jason Paburko, and I'm an RPF in the state of California, RPF number 2769. I apologize because I'm not going to have a prepared statement like I normally would, because we've had a great information cycle this morning and a lot of things that we'll have to discuss and react to based on some of the stuff that was talked about today. I would first of all like to thank Matt, St. John, and staff for developing a new level of openness that involves all parties, not just with the working professionals and the agencies, but getting the working professionals, the landowners, the NGOs, getting us all in the room together to talk about stuff is something that we haven't done facilitated by this board, and I think it is probably the best way to solve problems, is get the interest together and talk about it. This kind of board meeting is not structured for dialogue and rapid information exchange and sharing of ideas in an ideal fashion, and I just want to thank you for opening this, and I hope whatever I say next doesn't affect our continued relationship as we move forward with that.
Yeah. I'm just going to go through my notes here from today. I'd like to hope that this board recognizes and sees some of the information that CAL FIRE's data has shown on canopy retention on the NTMPs, and as we move forward, talking about canopy and shade in the future, as we look forward to previously discussed policies on basin plan amendments for temperature, that we come back to this data that's been presented, that shade canopy as observed on the ground has not been shown to be a significant issue. As Craig pointed out earlier, a lot of the rules in the forest practice rule set, which is right here, regarding sediment and erosion protection, haven't changed since 1983. The erosion hazard calculations are from technical addendum rule number 3. I might be wrong. But they've been there for a while, and the way that we've been evaluating erosion hazard and water bar spacing have not been changing with the anadromous protection rules. So the older plans are still looking at dealing with erosion much the same way. With the T&I rule set, we've been looking more at stream buffers, canopy, road rocking and surfacing, and crossing design. The one thing that's been good in this process is we've had the opportunity to familiarize much of the staff with the interconnectedness between Porter Cologne, the California Forest Practice Rules, CEQA. But the one thing that kind of disturbed me a little bit, and I don't know if this would have been, if board members would have been able to participate in these focus groups, but there still seems to be a lack of familiarity with this 300-page document within the board membership. And I would hope that, it's all available for download. It's light reading over the course of 3 years. And get the 01 book, too, and take a look at how they change. It is not fun reading, which is why, again, it's important to, when there's questions about what's in here, the best person to ask is a forester. And that's why I have encouraged this board in the past to find it and acquire an RPF. And again, I also support filling the timber review chief position with a forester. Let's see. One of the points that we saw today were we saw some statistics on sites that were defined as departures from the forest practice rules. There's a lot of terminology going around in some of the studies and some of the documents and ECPs about different things. For example, a departure from the forest practice rules, from a CAL FIRE perspective, is it doesn't match the language in here. It doesn't necessarily have a connection to a significant or an environmental impact, and that needs to be weighed into the statistics. Another thing that is constantly talked about is the forest practice rules uses the term active erosion site, which is a site that is actively eroding and causing sediment to transport to a water course, versus what we use within the ECP process, which is a CSDS, or a critical controllable sediment discharge site, which isn't necessarily equal to an active erosion site. A CSDS site could be something as simple as an oversized culvert that doesn't have a critical dip on it. So there exists a potential for sediment contribution should the pipe plug, but the site itself is not contributing sediment to a water course. And we tend to use these terms interchangeably, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that a CSDS site was originally described on field trips as having the potential to deliver to a water course, be anthropogenic in nature, and reasonably respond to mitigation. It does not necessarily have to be something that would cause a violation of the basin plan. I'm impressed that we're getting to the point where this agency's staff is looking at the forest practice rules as having the ability to meet water quality requirements. And so I would like to encourage this board to support that position and potentially even go as far as to support a move for BMP certification, if that were ever again to be possible. There's been much discussion in my career that BMP certification of the forest practice rules could have a significant impact on how business is conducted and providing restoration of competitiveness between us and sister industries in Oregon. And that it's always been the assumption by many in the regulated public that this board would be the holdout on BMP certification of the forest practice rules. And with that, again, I'd like to thank staff and really encourage the board to accept the staff recommendation when it comes up to extend this process. We've worked, many of us have worked very hard reading a lot of data, and it would be a shame to rush something in the sake of trying to meet a self-imposed deadline when we're so close to getting something that works. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Any comments, questions? Thank you. Mr. Matt Green, followed by Ruth Ann Schultz.
Hello again, everyone. How you guys doing? Matt Green, registered professional forester, president of the California Licensed Foresters Association, in case anybody had a brain lapse like I have. Anyhow, I just had a couple things as we've been going through these monitoring plans in the study group or in the working groups. A couple of questions rang out to me, and I hope that when you're looking through these, they ring out to you. One is, we have all these things that were failing. And, you know, why did they fail? Were they implemented right? Were they designed right and they just failed? We're working with landscapes here. We're not working with a sidewalk gutter that, you know, collects water for 50 feet or something. We're dealing with landscapes, you know, sometimes thousands of feet long, or watersheds, you know, that they're massive at times. So why did these things fail? And neither staff looked at why they failed or if they were implemented correctly. There was one thing that noted that Mr. Brandow noted that almost all of the failures that they noticed were from cattle, trespass, or some other use. It wasn't from the logging activities. So, you know, as you're going through these data, realize that there's other uses going on the land, that implementation is the key here. Staff getting out, foresters getting out, making sure that these things are maintained right, built right, are more important than a piece of paper. Secondly, and this gets back to professionalism, when a harvest plan is proposed, I write, you know, a crossing definition or a description or whatever the mitigation is. We go out as a review team and we come up with recommendations. Staff may not completely, you know, agree with what I have proposed. Geologists might have some other idea of how to address the situation. As a team, we come together on this mitigation. Sometimes we're right, sometimes we're wrong. We do the best. We're not trying to make a problem out there. We're trying to correct problems. And the more time that we actually get to spend on the ground seeing things done, seeing culverts going in, seeing crossings put in, your staff, me, everybody involved, the better off everything is going to be, the better the beneficial uses are. Mr. Corbett, you had a question about where do we go from here. I would just echo Jason's BMP certification idea. I think it's worth looking at. I know it's been proposed in the past, and there were obvious stumbling blocks. The last thing I would say is that initially one of the biggest problems that everybody had was cost. Right now, it's almost impossible to sell logs in Humboldt and Trinity County, from what I've heard. Sonoma and Mendocino County, prices are down over $100 a thousand board feet. That's substantial. To go out and do things like erosion control plans, while I understand the merit of them, I don't see the need to create a separate document. I think that we are on track, that as foresters and as review staff, we can put this information in a usable document in one place, instead of having to write a harvest plan, then write an erosion control plan and double up on the landowner and cost him more money. So this is part of the process and the communications that we've had with your staff, and I think everybody's starting to see the value of that and the value of everybody working together. Cal Fire's in the room, your staff's in the room, foresters, landowners. I would just ask, you know, to really understand that, you know, this is going to take time. When we started this last April in Weaverville, I think most of us told you, you know, this is going to take 2 or 3 years. So I know you've got an April or an August deadline, but please realize that this is going to take time, and know that you have everybody's support when you have, you know, the extension next month up. So thank you.
Thank you. Any comments, questions? Ruthann Schultz, and I apologize if I can't really read this name, but I'm going to guess at it, that Cheryl Stoneman? Is that correct? Actually, it's after Ruthann Schultz.
Good afternoon, Chair Noren and board members. You've heard, my name is Ruthann Schulte, and I'm executive director of the Buckeye. And you've heard a lot of technical suggestions and input, and typically I would not waste your time making any additional comments. But I did want to take the opportunity today to extend our appreciation. I've sat before you several times over the past few years asking the board to encourage staff members to work more closely with landowners, and I think we've seen that here. I appreciate all the time and effort that Matt and Jim have put into the focus groups, and of course that's included more than just the landowners and their representative foresters. But I also appreciate the fact that staff has worked more closely with CAL FIRE too. I think that's been a constructive exercise, and I hope that continues. So I look forward to, there's more work yet to be done, obviously, as we sally forth. We're very hopeful on the end product, and we look forward to continuing to work together and extend our thanks.
Great. Thank you. And actually, next following is Mitch Hunt.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, board members. My name is Charles Stoneman.
Sorry about messing up your name. I just had a hard time reading it.
No, it's
sorry
it's,
about that.
It's tough to get it the first time. Anyway, my name is Charles Stoneman. I am a timber landowner in Humboldt County, and I am also a registered professional forester consultant in Humboldt County. It's fortunate for me that I'm sort of going towards the last here, because everything that I was looking to say has been said and been said well. There's only a few things that I would like to add. I'd like to stress that we as landowners, timber landowners, take a great deal of pride in our timberlands and the work that we're doing on that. That, for me, fortunately, conveys over to my clients in the management of their timberlands. And I've been in this business since 1985. I've had the fortunate opportunities to work on both industrial lands as an industrial manager of a timberland, and also later as a consultant. In all those years that I've been doing this, I've never been aware that I've had a violation or had a violation of the basin plan or have created a problem. In all our projects that I've been involved with, we've always tried to leave the land in a better condition than when we first got there or laying out the project. In many cases, particularly dealing in the Mattole, we were dealing with zero net discharge for years, and that's basically translated over to most of what work we do today. We're trying to achieve a zero net discharge on all our projects. And so I think I'm rather proud to say that in the management of my timberlands, I'm not only not discharging, I'm also trying to correct problems so that the old problems, the legacy issues that we're dealing with, become less of an issue with discharge. And I'd like to thank Jim Burke and the board staff for the process that they put forth here. I think I'm fortunate that I'm also serving on the waiver focus group meetings with the stakeholders. And one thing I'd like to say is this process first came up in March of 2009 at the March meeting in Fortuna. I asked Jim Burke, after he gave his presentation, and basically the presentation was the new waiver, the renewed waiver, with a layer of guidelines with regarding to how we layer on these guidelines over the forest practice rules. I asked him to basically show me the problem. I'm a problem fixer. I want to fix it. And I never got an answer to that. Well, it seems like over the course of time, we may be trying to define what the problem is with the NTMPs and the older NTMPs. And in that, we've made a request basically for gap analysis between the forest practice rules and compliance with the basin plan and what the water quality needs are. I think we're getting there, and comments from staff have been favorable in that they have a better insight to the forest practice rules and how they're being applied. A lot of the issues may be just enforcement issues, from what I'm hearing, and not necessarily the forest practice rules. Also, I just want to say that we seem to be going in the right direction with the stakeholder meetings, and I applaud the work that's been done to date. And then one comment I want to basically put forth is erosion control plans, or ECPs, versus effectiveness monitoring. My contention is I'm not quite sure we need erosion control plans, but I will buy off on effectiveness monitoring by the RPF on these active NTOs and NTMPs. I think this would allow us to observe, document, and correct any issues that we see out there. And then my last comment is, you heard from Craig Blenko, you're hearing from a few other RPFs here, and myself. We're here. If you have any questions now is the time. Thank you.
Thank you. Comments or questions? Fantastic. Thank you for your time. Mitch Hunt, followed by Mr. Charles Ciancio.
Good afternoon, Board. My name is Mitch Hunt. I'm a registered professional forester since 1987. I wanted to say real briefly, thank you for the Board's openness to this issue and the work and the first extension and extending this process as needed to make sure that you come to a real good workable situation. In those 24 years, almost all of my work has been THP and TMP preparation administration. I've worked extensively with the water quality staff. In fact, I bumped into Andy Baker on the way up. Didn't recognize him because we worked in 1982 or 92 or something like that. So, currently the staff members that I work with on at least a monthly basis, whether it's a PHI or an ECP completion, it's a workable, very organized process. So, but what I wanted to say was a couple things that I heard in the presentations, that a landowner does sign up, and it used to be sign up for this NTMP and you're locked in. And we want you to spend some extra money on inventory and sustainable yield things and some guarantees that the forest health is insured. But the carrot is that you're locked in. But we knew that as endangered species changed and special regulations came about that it wasn't static. And so what I want to say is there's a lot in the forest practice rules. Jason pointed out the water bar spacing has never changed. But it's not static, and what has changed and it's upgraded every time notice of timber operations is submitted. Anything that wasn't disclosed or discovered in a 1990 NTMP, whether it's inside a unit or along a pertinent road, those sites of sediment delivery are discovered by the RPF, disclosed, mitigations proposed, and a plan of action. And so it seems to me that a lot of this is driven of fear of the older plans. Without an ECP, how are we ever going to know that the sites are there and that they'll get repaired? Because that's what we're after. And so I believe that the current process of the notice of timber operations actually brings in the new rules, the salmon rules and that, and your professionals are finding those sites, disclosing them, mitigating, agreeing with mitigations, and those sites are getting repaired. The other thing, I was glad Matt stated that's a draft, that the product that might be out there is a draft, because in that, when you read through that as someone who does a lot with statistics, whether it's timber cruising or whatever, there's a lot of subjective things like the 141 sites. It doesn't disclose as to whether those sites are have been repaired or whether they're out there in the back 40 of the NTMP that hasn't been looked at since 1990. And so those sites are still, if that culvert was submitting sediment at that time, it's still in need of repair. And the time of repair is when the active timber operations occur out there. And so it's important to sort out when you're looking at that 141 sites, are there sites that have not been operated at all, and they're waiting for active timber operations to occur. So, anyways, again, thank you, and those are my comments.
Mr. Chair?
I did want to say that I do support the extension as you see fit to come up with a good product on this.
Appreciate it. Comments and questions? Chuck Ciancio, followed by Felice Pace.
We all still awake? Chuck Ciancio, RPF 317. Been knocking around doing this for over 50 years, going on 50 years. I've been here since the beginning. Water quality, timber, there's been a lot of contentious issues. There's a couple of things. I will say ditto on what Blanco said, and I'll try to cover a couple of those points. But I've given you some handouts. I was just simply going to read what one of them is, but there's been all kinds of points, or the one page I gave you. There's been a lot of points brought up that need to be clarified. The Forest Practice Act is subservient to water quality. No questions. Carl Yee put that in. RPF, when I sign my name, I'm certifying there's no environmental changes in that plan that require changes to the plan. You heard that over and over. The landowner is liable for the corrections. But that doesn't matter who does it. The landowners, that's for you folks. You've got somebody to go after. Your concern is beneficial uses. As Jim Burke, I think, is finding out and kind of choking on a few real-world realities when I'm talking to him out there, your beneficial uses are not being impacted by NTMPs. And I don't care what the CDF study says. There's all kinds of things wrong with it. Buy me lunch, and I'll tell you all the reasons sometimes. You are duplicating NTMPs and all the processes in NTMPs. And my point will be followed up with all I've given you. I gave you a bunch of paper. I'm seeing in California a problem, a little problem. It's a cumulative impact to regulations. You guys are just part of the problem. And I'll just read you what I gave you. After going on 50 years experiencing some supposedly bad lead to protectionism and eliminating, which eliminates some bad, which creates some other bad, and eliminating a lot of good, I say a friendly fooey on you folks in California. And here's the reason I say that. I see full and proper use of natural resources and use of field-experienced input that utilizes proven and peer-reviewed, you've heard me say this before, science and site-specific facts, ignored in California. You should have more RPFs up here. You didn't get it until the public comment. RPFs and field experience is what you ought to be listening to. Okay, as illustrated by handling of non-industrial timber harvest plans, timber landowners passing up on short-term returns, harvesting what is grown, and maintaining and improving things for species and humans are being dumped on. Now, I've provided you all kinds of legal bases and logical arguments and everything else. It's gone nowhere. Intent of California legislative legislative intent for non-industrial timber harvest plans has been ignored by California Department of Forestry, with the California Department of Forestry and the Board of Forestry, California Department of Fish and Game, many other regulatory agencies, and California Water Quality Agency. The intent was to help these folks, give them an incentive. You've taken it away. Timber landowners and their representatives have quietly let all that has happened happen. I mean, I hate to break into the good mood here today, and I probably make everybody mad at me, but you guys need to hear some real-world stuff. While California private timberlands, without growth on 50% trust lands like national forests in California, the private lands I'm talking about, grow enough wood to fill California's wood needs. There is a reason 80% of the wood used in California comes from out-of-state sources. And I expect 20% from private lands to go down, where regulations are just being piled on. Now, and I'll wrap this up. I used to ask myself, why not do an NTMP? Well, it has changed. Why do an NTMP? Now, you folks like what they're doing. You like all the trees. But I, again, buy me lunch, and I'll show you how you convert an NTMP to a clear cut very easily now. Now, why are you guys, you're forcing landowners to do this? Why not take what money you can get and have a better life? It's the people's life span that you're talking about, not the trees. They can take the money and go somewhere else or live a better life. And I think you're forcing it into it. I guess just to wrap it up, you folks and all these other government agencies and commissions, this is your legacy. What happens in California to the resources and small landowners, which I've given you all that other stuff, you can look through it, that's your legacy. If that's what you want, that's what you'll get. This tier one, tier two adds costs, requires monitoring. We can't stop you. You can do whatever you want. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. Felice Pace.
I know not much for me, huh? I had a breakdown today, too, and that kind of slowed me down.
My name is Felice Pace, and I'm here on behalf of the Klamath Forest Alliance and the North Group of the Sierra Club, where I'm the water chair. I appreciate these non-industrial timberland owners, a lot of the ones that are here and that spoke here, and I appreciate good foresters. They've taught me most of what I know about forestry, and I endorse what I heard today, and staff has heard me say this, I don't know if you have, that, you know, we need to really focus on the bad actors, not on the good actors. One of the things, the monitoring, one of the first times CDF has actually monitored with a random sample, and that's really good to see. You know, there are some problems out there. People don't want to see it. So, you know, David knows it. He's an RPF, and he's out there a lot. And they're a minority. That's the good news. You know, it's not 90%. It's 20% or whatever it is, on these things. A little bit of context. There's a proposal in Sacramento right now from the Buckeye Conservancy to increase, I understand, I've been told this, to increase the size, maximum size of NTPs from 2,500 acres to 10,000 acres. We're not looking at small acreages right now, but we might be looking at bigger acreages, and they're not going to come back to you if you do some thing for NTP and say, we changed the rules for these, so now we're coming back to you. You're not going to do that. FPR certification on BMPs, there was a statewide effort in circa 1990. I was on the statewide Board of Forestry Commission. Bill Keir was the contractor, and we were trying to get, the idea was to get the rules certified as BMPs. It didn't happen because basically CDF would not put in a program like the program we have, the Forest Service has, that you learned a lot about, remember? You know, when they came, where they do a random sample every year of BMPs in all the different areas that where there's potential, they do that random sample and they do effectiveness and implementation monitoring like what your staff and the Board of Forestry did on this. So it's they refused to do that, and that's why EPA would not certify the rules as best management practices. And I felt from the beginning of this effort, and I think I said in Weaverville that, you know, they're in. This is the wrong forum. They should be get the forest practice rules certified as best management practices, and that will help us, your staff, you, very much to protect best management practices, because then we won't have to have add-ons. But until those rules are certified as best management practices, then you have to ask the question about them. So I was on that committee, and we put in a lot of energy, but we couldn't get there, and basically it was the Board of Forestry not wanting to do the hill slope monitoring in a manner that was scientifically acceptable. That's the problem with the certification. So, you know, that's a question I have for your staff and legal. I mean, why are we doing this, you know? They have to get the rules certified, otherwise you're going to have to add things on. So why are we wasting time here? The COHO rules may get 90% there. Who knows? You know, they got to be run through the process. And that's what I recommend to these owners and to the RPFs especially. Roads remain the core of the problem. Inspect and fix requirements post-storm and post-wet season. You know, if we could get those into the forest practice rules, that's the way I was taught. It's by foresters and forest managers that it's supposed to be done. After a major storm and after the end of the wet season, you go out and you inspect and you find the problems and fix them. I've made complaints on where False Klamath Cove, where we've had the ocean, we get the ocean turned brown from an industrial ownership. And, you know, when they go out, they find it's road problems. And, you know, inspect and fix is the way to do that. If that's what we need in the forest practice rules in order to make them effective, in my estimation. And, you know, it's important to remember that this road sediment is episodic. It's not just the forest practice rules are fine as far as erosion goes, but there's mass wasting. There's landslides. We have incredible amount of landslides, and that's where the rules fall down. And, you know, the last time we had a 20-year storm, 25, 30-year storm was 2005. The last time we had, like, a 30, 40-year storm was 1997. So we're talking a lot of years. And so those problems of that water being redirected and that little failure that he showed you in the slide, well, if that's there when a big storm comes, that's when the whole road prism is going to go. And it's going to wind up in the stream, in all probability. Not always, yes. Sometimes there's a bench down there. But that's our problem, is this episodic stuff that comes to roost in the big storms. And you know, there's an enrollment comment. I have a general comment on enrollment, which is that, you know, the board, I mean, we've got water code to guide us in this and what's adequate. The staff in all these problems, I'm on the other committee, the staff for irrigated lands or now agricultural lands, the staff wants to, you know, tier this thing in a way that some people don't enroll. Well, if some people don't enroll, and especially because we don't have really good education programs, we don't have very many education programs, and this recommendation has come up in the agricultural committee as well. You know, not having people enroll means, and giving them coverage, means you're saying they're compliant. And as pointed out, size of an operation, you can have a small operation that's making a lot of impacts. So, you know, the enrollment is a enrollment approach is a problem. Tiering is fine, but what you need first is you need to enroll people and then to, in some manner, evaluate their operation and whether they are a risk. Like the ag guys all said in our committee, you know, it's not size. I could show you a picture right now of, I got it in my on my disc, of a small little feeding operation, cattle feeding operation on Soap Creek in the Scott River Valley that's got bigger impacts than some of the bigger cattle operations over there because, you know, it's right on a creek and it's very confined. So, you know, we have to somehow, and third-party evaluations, those people have to be certified, you know, that's fine, but they have to be certified. The idea, I want to end with this. The idea, and I appreciate, you know, you're taking the time in a workshop to really listen. The idea prevalent among some North Coast Water Board staff that the whole classes of discharges can be provided coverage absent enrollment and absent on-the-ground evaluation isn't compliant in our view with Water Code Section 13242. and applicant and other applicable non-point sources. So, you know, we need to do this in the right kind of way. There's two points. You know, a lot of the people that came up said, you know, we need to make these things workable for people, these regulations. And I totally agree with that. I think most of our environmental people do agree with it. They have to be that, and there's another step. They also have to be effective in protecting and restoring, and we know, you know, we've got a lot of restoration there. So there are ways. We're going to continue to work towards this, but right now we don't think the staff's recommendation is there yet. We don't think it's in compliance. And, you know, Alan Levine participates in this, and we're almost all volunteers. You know, I'm 100% volunteer. I make my living as a substitute teacher these days. And, you know, so we can't do all the committees because there's a lot of them. But we do what we can, and I know some people are doing them. We're going to continue to try to work. I think extension is worth extending. It is good to see Board of Forestry. First time I've seen Cal Fire actually do a stratified, you know, a sample, a random sample of any kind. It wasn't really stratified. So that's all, unless there's some questions. I thank you for your time.
Any comments or questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you. I got a comment. Copies of my letter I'll put over there if anybody's interested.
Appreciate it.
I'll get some to staff.
I have no other speaker cards. Jim, would you come back up and talk to us, please?
I got one. We all
ask you if you would have any comments, suggestions, closing remarks on this, Jim.
I don't.
Really? All right. So what I see here on your handout, Jim, as next steps are four bullet items: continued collaboration and outreach efforts, extension of limited agreement. August 23rd is when that runs out, which is by coincidence our board meeting in August. Release a draft order in September and come to regional board December 6th for what I assume to be adoption. Uh-huh. That's what you're looking for.
Correct.
I assume then that you take the comments, suggestions, remarks that were put forth here today, mold them over, work them into your process that you've been working on, and continue. I assume that this collaboration also works with and outreach works with these northern and southern groups. It sounds like you're on track to get this done. I do echo Mr. Massey's and actually his remarks about it's our issue of having extensions here. I am willing to give, and I'll go on record to say that I'm willing to give an extension on this in August, a glide path this to get this done by the end of the year. That would be my goal, to see this done by the end of the year. It sounds like a tremendous amount of work's been done here, by the way, and I thank everybody that's here, the people that aren't here, the agencies. Cal Fire, thank you very much for coming. I very much appreciate your participation here. The education continues, including to myself. And with that, unless you had no further remarks, is there other board member comments or questions here? Mr. Massey.
I would only, and you know what I'm going to ask, Jim. Are we going to make it December 6th?
I have been told that that's when we're supposed to make it.
Okay.
Good answer.
Well, if there is any doubt, as many of our RFP friends have said, now's the time to say it, if there's a doubt on it. The problem for me is one that I've seen it, and it isn't just with this, or it isn't just with timber, or it isn't just with any portion of the stuff we deal with. We simply have somehow lost our commitment to what a timeline means, and it makes it very, very difficult for everybody from staff to the regulated community to have a date. So if there's any doubt about December 6th, please speak up now and you know, pick a date that'll work.
May I speak freely?
May I speak freely?
December 6th, we'll make it, Matt.
I want to hear them speak freely.
The process, I mean, we're, you know, in 2009, we scattered the flock. We are in the process of reconvening them, and it's a difficult process just to get people to show up, to start, you know, going over these things in just to understand these things. It is a process. I have been told what deadline to make, but it's hard to put a time frame on a process that has a certain organic component to it, is what I'm just going to leave it at that.
Okay, thank you. I think many of those of you who have been around and watched my career here, if you will, I am more than eager to do collaborations and whatever it takes to get the job done so that in the final analysis there is agreement, because regulations which are forced on people that have no interest in supplying them are ridiculous. We cannot enforce them that way. So I am absolutely in favor of the collaborative approach and getting the job done. But I think you'll also agree that when we set a time and then everybody anticipates that time and then it doesn't happen and we repeatedly do that, pretty soon the organic problem that you're talking about happens not because it is endemic to it, but rather because we have lost concern for some kind of a timeline. So it is that. I'm simply asking that we clean up our act, if you will, that we do this.
And just again, Mr. Massey, as the new EO, I take those words, that emphasis on this issue, very seriously. And you're really not addressing Jim when you say that. You're addressing me. Yeah. And I appreciate that. What we will be coming to you in August for an extension. At this time, today, I'm strongly encouraging our staff to commit to it by December. With that said, I am going to defer to the comment that Mr. Burke just made about the process. Yes. So in August, we will be asking for an extension. Today, my intent is that we'll be saying that extension is till December. Let's give ourselves a little bit of time working with our focus groups.
Agreed.
It's not going to be in August, we will ask for an extension. At this today, I believe it'll be only until December.
Mr. Corbett.
Yes, first I want to say, just to be very clear, I had indicated there's a prima facie case based upon what we had today for an extension. However, the decision will be made upon the duly noticed public hearing and what's introduced into the evidence at that time. Two, I wanted to, Regional Water Quality Control Board staff got a lot of praise for their working with forestry, and they deserve that. But I also want to thank forestry, because it takes two to work together. And I want to personally thank you for going the extra mile and making this work. And so that's very key to the process. And I think you've heard favorable responses from stakeholders and others that you are doing that. And I think you're really to be complimented. I also think in 2003, I believe, they did actually hand out a forest practice manual to all regional board members, and I think it might be good to give an updated version. I'm still using my 2003 one, and then I got to go on the computer, so that would be good. I do think we need a strong reservation of rights in whatever we come up with, and we need very carefully crafted findings to the particular circumstances we find. Regarding the 208 BMP certification process, of course, I think that's very different than this. I do want to say it's difficult to discern consistency in the United States Environmental Protection Agency on 208 BMP certifications between states, but Felice Pace was correct. They did deny it based upon the lack of effectiveness monitoring, and at least one document that I read, that was for the lack of in-stream monitoring. And, of course, there's huge costs associated with that. But I think that's another proceeding, and I'm very encouraged again with your work, and thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Dines?
My thoughts are, I think Matt's already kind of alluded to it, that my suggestion was that you're not formally asking for the extension until August anyway. So at that time, that sounds like it gives you plenty of time to really look at what a reasonable extension is to you. And I think that you should take that to heart. I understand your boss is saying December, but yeah, you got a little extra time to negotiate that. The other thing is I heard John say thank you to the foresters, thank you to the staff. And I have to say, as the new member on this board, I'm quite impressed that we happen to have the deputy director of CAL FIRE sitting in this room and attending this meeting and doing these surveys. And this cooperation is sounds to be somewhat unprecedented and a new way of working. And I'm privileged to be a part of this. So, again, thank you, Mr. Snyder, for being here and spending the time with us.
Yeah. Ms. Harris?
I just want to say that I remember the meeting in Weaverville and other meetings when there was an outcry for, please, I guess we called it the pause button. Things get groovy names when we're doing this stuff. But what I wanted to say is I work on the land. I work on the land for my job, and I live on the land for my life. And it's really, really important when you get people looking at things from different perspectives to take that time, like I said earlier, to say, this is how I see that culvert. And this is for another person to be able to say, well, this is how I see it. And like you said, a geologist may see it very different than the engineer, who may see it very different than the landowner, who may see it very different than the truck driver who's going to have to drive over that to haul those logs in and out, or the cattle rancher who uses it to move cattle from one point on the ranch to the other. I always think it's funny, range people think Doug fir is an invasive species and we call it a weed, but foresters love Doug fir and they think, why would you ever say that? And we say, well, it destroys oak savanna, you know, grasslands, and they know it doesn't, it turns them into forest land. And you have these conversations out there constantly. And so what my heart's desire was, as being a member of the board during this pause button pushing, was that, you know, those tailgate conversations happened, and that those elbows were rubbed, and you know, hunks of salami and cheese and bread were shared on the tailgate, and you guys had an opportunity in a non-regulatory setting to look at the land together. And I'm really glad to say that it seems like that's happening. And I know, I work with different people who own different kinds of land, and holy cow, everybody wants something to say, but boy, they want to say it when it's convenient for them, and can you go this day, and can you come that day, and oh, that day doesn't work for me. And getting those groups of people together and then stopping the complaining that usually happens for the first hour about why we all hate each other and saying, okay, great, now that we've covered that, let's look at how we can fix this. I hear you. I get that. So anyway, I just want to say that I'm grateful. And I'm grateful for the landowners, I'm grateful to the foresters, and I'm grateful for the staff, and I'm grateful for the direction of this board to be more than just, you know, people who dress nice today. You know, I'm usually dirty, and Bill always harasses me at the end of the board meeting when I put my boots back on. Oh, there's the real Heidi. So I just want to say that I can appreciate that need to work on the land, and I'm grateful that you guys are spending time together. That's how things are going to get done, and I'm very glad to hear that that's percolating through and that that's happening.
Well said. All right, Jim. So it looks like you gathered the flock. We'll talk to you again in August. And I have to say, you got the best tie on today. So
yeah.
It's the only one I have.
Yeah. It looks great, man. All right, with that, we're going to break. We're going to go to closed session. Matt, could you advise me how long you anticipate closed session to take? Because we're going to mix it with lunch.
Closed session only needs to take 20 minutes.
All right, dinner and a show. We're going to be back here at 2:30, and we have information items for the afternoon. Thank you very much.